This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with Sam Harrop, MW, and co-chair of the IWC and expert on faults. How are you, Sam?
I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent. Just a quick question about some of the faults that you're getting at the IWC. We're going to talk a little bit about volatile acidity today as well.
Yeah, well, we've been doing a lot of hard work on faults here and got some fascinating results. You know, the most important thing we've found is that cork taint is not the only fault, and a lot of people might have you believe that it is the only fault. There are a lot of faults due to winemaking, which seems to be a serious trend, which we're going to be releasing in our faults report within the next couple of months. Effectively, winemakers need to smarten up their game. And winemakers in particular in the old world need to smarten up their game, bottle wines in a stable condition, free from these other faults that we classify into sulfides, oxidation, Brettanomyces, you know, rot, which is actually inherent in the fruit, believe it or not. We're seeing wines coming through showing these horrible dusty grey rot characters. So it's not just about TCA. You know, what we've found in 2006 and 2007, just over 50% of all of the faults could be categorized as closure related. That's not all cork taint, by the way. We found that of all faults recorded, 28% roughly in both years were due to TCA, i.e. cork taint.
Yep.
So there's another 20-odd percent coming from closures. So what are they? Screw cap reduction is one of them. And also reduction from cork as well. So the closure is obviously important in this faults discussion, faults debate, but it's not all important. The other winemaking faults, as we classify them, take up the other 50%. So although in the past winemakers have blamed the poor old cork manufacturers for any kind of fault in their wine, those days are numbered. I'm certainly not sympathizing with the cork manufacturers. They've got a lot of work to do to improve the cork quality. You know, that's still a major issue. As I've said before, 3% of all wines tasted at the International Wine Challenge, 3% of all wines sealed with natural closure, I should say, are affected by cork taint. That's
yep.
a huge amount. That's 3 million bottles, corked bottles in the UK alone. Actually, no, it's more than that. Whatever. You get the scale of size of the problem. Now, so the other type of faults under winemaking faults are microbial faults. As I said before, Brettanomyces, bacterial faults. We're seeing some lactic acid, putrescine characters coming
What's
through.
What's putrescine?
That's a compound that's generated by various bacterium that has a disagreeable aroma of sick, unfortunately. It's not
baby vomit.
Baby vomit, you got it. It's
I
not
know
the most.
Yeah.
Certain yeast can produce it as well. It's not a lovely character.
Some wines with low minerality seem to have that as well.
Yeah.
Sense of it.
Well, your point about minerality raises a lot of questions. What is minerality? You know, is it sulfides? Is it Brett? Is it putrescine, God help us.
Is it the stones in the ground?
Is it the stones in the ground?
Don't think so.
The winemakers would have you believe that, and certainly in the old world. You know, and, well, that's another debate, really, but it does raise the great point of where does a fault become a complexing factor, and this is why I'm so fascinated in faults and why I want to understand the extent of faults throughout the industry and then educate those faults.
Okay,
to the consumer.
So you got putrescine effects, microbial faults?
Yeah, and then under chemical faults, well, there's the oxidation and chemical sulfide faults.
How common is oxidation issues?
Yeah, we've seen quite a bit of it, actually. Well over 15% of the total faults recorded are oxidation.
Yep.
Related. Some of those are due to inadequate natural corks, you know, because natural cork has varying elasticity.
Yep.
One bottle is not the same as the next. Unlike screw cap, it's not a technical closure. So it can be linked to the closure. But more importantly, I think the bigger issue is people are actually bottling wines in an oxidized state or bottling the wines with very low levels of sulfur dioxide, so they oxidize quickly, which is a serious issue. You know, wines have to be bottled in a stable condition. That, you know, the real reason for all of this faults analysis is to share it with the industry, to educate the industry that it's not just cork taint. Winemaking issues are huge as well. So smarten up your act. Pay a little bit more attention at bottling. A lot of winemakers, believe it or not, spend a huge amount of effort, blood, sweat and tears, making the best wines in the world, and then they hand it over to the production manager for bottling, you know, and walk away.
What about issues like bulk importing of wine where it's bottled in the country? Like some winemakers say, no, I don't want to do bulk importing, but from an environmental point of view, particularly in the UK, bulk importing is quite a good thing.
Carbon footprint.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you think that they shouldn't be bulk imported because you need to have control over that bottling, or can you prep the wine before you ship it over?
I think the answer to that is quite a complicated question, a difficult question to answer, I should say. I don't think there's any one answer. I think if it's a commercial product, a fruit-driven sort of 499 product for supermarkets, there is a strong case to be bottled in the UK. As you said, environmentally, it seems to be more sound, less carbon emission. But you have to be, the winemaker at both ends has to be very careful in the preparation of those wines. And so perhaps in the instance of fruit-driven wine, sulfur dioxide levels should be a little higher than they would normally store in their own tanks. They lose control, effectively. When the wine gets shipped, even though it's in a giant-sized tank, effectively they lose control of it. And, you know, supposedly a lot of these tankers are insulated and the temperature doesn't vary greatly. But, there have been examples where wines have got too hot, where wines haven't been filtered properly, where the sulfur levels haven't been high enough and the wines arrive oxidized. Just the other day I was talking to a buddy in Russia who imported some bulk wine and it turned up oxidized. So it can be a good thing. It can be a great thing if you've got a competent winemaker at the winery side and a competent winemaker at the bottling side who knows how to prepare the wine on arrival for bottling. That's traditionally been an issue with the UK wine industry, is that it's not a winemaking, there's not a winemaking mentality in the UK. Although there is a lot of wineries and it is a growing sector, there hasn't been an understanding truly how to bottle wines properly. It's more of a sort of food technician's approach.
Yeah, sure.
And they've learned a lot over the last few years. But I guess what I'm saying is that winemakers over here who have been bottling bulk for Australians and New Zealanders haven't necessarily had the same approach to quality as the winemakers in New Zealand and Australia. So that needs to be resolved. And then just to answer the other part, in terms of premium wines, there's no question the wine needs to be bottled at the site, at the winery, you know, because that's where the winemaker needs to be really involved in the wine bottling process, not just handing it over to his trusted production manager, because he or she should be taking a real vested interest in that bottling process to make sure it's bottled in a stable condition for the consumer.
Okay. Any other faults?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. It's just really opening up a can of worms, really, and I just really wanted to emphasise the importance we're placing on winemaking faults. It's not just about closure. Closure is a huge issue, but winemaking is also a massive issue, and it seems to be becoming more of an issue over the 3 years we've done it. You know, this year, 2008, seems to be... winemaking problems seem to be a bigger issue than in the past, so it's not getting any better, put it that way.
A fault that I get in some wines, but not, I'm particularly not as sensitive as some people, is volatile acidity. What is volatile acidity and what should you be looking for, and is it a good thing or a bad thing?
I talked about oxidation just before.
Yep.
Yeah, volatile acidity is generally a bit of a signpost for oxidation. Volatile acidity is... it gives you this sort of sensory quality of a bruised apple, if you like. Picture this: you bite into a fresh apple, you then just leave it on your bench, your kitchen bench on a hot summer's day, leave it there for 20 minutes, come back and just smell the apple. That is, to me, classic volatile acidity aroma. And that's an extreme version. So it's, I always use the term sort of bruised apple when talking about volatile acidity. Now, in certain levels, though, you'd be surprised it can actually enhance the complexity of...
It gives a lift to the
wine. It does, yeah. You know, ethyl acetate is a form, is a volatile acid, effectively. And, well, look, ethyl acetate is a compound very common in wines made with maceration carbonate. Approach, you know, Gamay from Beaujolais.
Yeah. I was going to say Beaujolais is the carbonate, you know,
so it's not all evil, but we're once again coming back to my philosophy, and it balances everything. It's in certain styles, volatile acidity can add complexity, can enhance the aromatic profile, can lift the wine. High tone characters can lift the aromas, but it's all about balance.
Not, you said high tone, not ketone, high tone.
Well, I use the term high tone.
It's, are they ketones?
No.
So
not
my sixth form chemistry is not quite showing.
No, when I say high tones, that's no chemical term. That's just a tone. It's part of my vocabulary.
Yeah.
But it lifts the aroma, as you say.
See, I always thought a wee bit of VA is quite good, but it comes off the wine pretty quick, doesn't it? Like you get VA and it just boils off and then it's gone. Is that right, or have I got it wrong?
Yeah, as the wine opens up, and the reduction, you know, the wine gets more air, and the fruit comes out with a bit more oxygen as it's decanted or whatever. You see these other fruit flavors coming through, other tertiary notes coming through to support the volatile acidity. So maybe it's not so much that the VA is blowing off; it's just that other flavors are coming through and creating a marriage with the VA.
Because I have noticed. VA, particularly things like old wines like Barolos and things like that, when you first open them up, you get a real chunk of that high note, what I associate with VA, and then after 10, 20 minutes, I don't really notice it again. Is it?
Well, they are high, you know, the term volatile is quite self-explanatory. They are unstable and they do seem to dissipate quite quickly, you're right. But there's also this other factor with other flavors, fruit flavors and tertiary flavors being released as more oxygen comes in. So for me, there's a bit of both, volatile acidity being blown off, but also the fruit coming through and joining it and muting the volatile acidity.
I seem to get the impression that it's more common with older wines that have been aged. Is that true, or?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at Pinot Noir from Burgundy, you know, young Pinot Noirs from Burgundy, some of the best examples have really high volatile acidities, you know. Basically, the higher the riper the fruit at harvest, the more sugar, obviously, and if we come back to my point before, the yeast can be stressed in high sugar, high alcohol environments. So at the end of fermentation, volatile acidity levels can dramatically increase because the yeast is struggling in this high alcohol environment.
Struggling yeast produce more sulfur and
more volatile acidity as well. I should have mentioned that earlier. So it's not just older wines. Come back to your point. It's more and more we're seeing higher volatile acidity in younger wines as well.
How does it develop? Is it a case that older wines have it because of the aging process, and that some wines because of the fruit levels, younger wines have got it, or is it? It's nothing to do with age of the wine. It doesn't develop in the bottle or anything like that. It's just there or not there.
I think, like all of these faulty compounds, they certainly evolve. They have a tertiary expression themselves. But they do generally get a little more extreme. But you can't consider the compound in isolation. There are these other flavors and other compounds evolving and going into their tertiary expression as well. And I think it's wrong to generalize that volatile acidity will eventually destroy a wine. If a wine is bottled with a certain level of volatile acidity, perhaps, you know, 0.7, 0.8 grams per litre, which is on the higher side of things, it's not necessarily going to, you know, mean the wine is, when it's open in 5-6 years' time, is a disaster. You know, because it depends on the redox potential of the wine. It depends on the inherent quality and stability of the wine and how the pH, for example, how it's going to age and how the fruit and reductive flavors are going to be released as the wine ages. So does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think you're saying it's quite complicated.
It is quite complicated. It's hugely complicated. And it comes back to this point again. I sound like a scratch record, sorry, but it's, you know, faults can be fantastic at the right level. It's very difficult to generalize.
Okay, Sam. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.